Ridge Road next to Coca-Cola, or contact Donna Garland at Sheridan Realty Associates.
When it comes to orthopedic care, experience matters. At Sheridan Orthopedic Associates, our team of board-certified specialists brings decades of trusted expertise to every diagnosis, treatment, surgery, and recovery plan. From sports injuries to joint replacements, Sheridan Orthopedics offers both surgical and non-surgical care tailored to your needs right here in your community. Choose the team that physicians and families have trusted for generations. Learn more about our team of experts at SheridanOrtho.com. Sheridan Orthopedics, expertise you can count on.
Talking with Bill from Tales of the City. Bill, can you tell me what you mean by treats with a purpose?
Sure. Humans use collagen now to kind of keep their bone health and their joint health. We have a really neat treat, which is a collagen puff, which are excellent for the dog's joints. The muscle looks like a pork rind. They're cheese-flavored, venison-flavored, beef-flavored, peanut butter-flavored, but they all have that same purpose. And Emma loves to demo those.
Treats with a Purpose at Tales of the City, 218 West Burkett.
This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program, brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whiting.
Wednesday, February 25th. From the foot of the Bighorns in Wyoming's Emerald City, I'm Floyd Whiting, and this is Public Pulse. This morning, we're joined by Britain Museum Communications Director, Jacob Rulio.
Rulo.
Close. I was close. And Advancement Associate, Danielle Arnault. Good morning, and welcome back to the show.
Thanks,
Jacob, this is your first time on. When it comes to what took you out to the Britain to begin with?
You mean as an employee?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I love art. Art is very important to me, and it's a fantastic museum, and the opportunity to work there was a pretty amazing opportunity. To get to be able to work in something that you believe in and you believe it's incredibly important, I think was super great.
You ever find yourself just wandering through the gallery?
Sometimes, yeah. Yeah. But, you know, being there, full time, you see a lot of it.
Yeah.
But sometimes, especially with the rotating exhibitions, I pop in and just have a look around.
You know, I think it would be a major distraction for me. I'm one of those guys that could stare at a painting for hours and try to find meaning in just about everything. Now, for listeners who may not have visited the Britain Museum recently, can you tell us a little bit about it and its mission?
Let's see. The Britain Museum is the historic Quarter Circle A ranch. We have the ranch house and the grounds. The old gallery building has been demolished years ago. We have the new gallery building, the Forrest E. Mars Jr. building. Mm-hmm. That houses the permanent collection and the rotating exhibitions that we have throughout the year.
And I'll jump in. The structure of the new building itself, if you haven't been out there, Floyd, is just amazing. It was built 10 years ago, and the architecture is just awesome. People come out, and the building itself is like a work of art. We've got a rammed earth wall, which is rammed earth, and that's actually what the Great Wall of China is made out of. So the wall will stand for a millennia. I always love that part because I just couldn't believe it when I got there and got to, you know, study a little bit about that. But for me, it's art, history, nature. We've got nature trails out there that people can walk on. We do, we're closely tied to the Bighorn Audubon Society with birding, and we're a wildlife conservation area. So it's wonderful for people that enjoy nature. But for me, I would say the Native American collection, Plains Indians, artifacts that we have is really what drew me to the Brinton. And I was raised in Bighorn, Wyoming. So just down the street from the Brinton and going there as a child at the Bradford Britton Memorial is what it was called when I grew up. We'd go picnic and just enjoy the environment out there, beautiful big cottonwoods and just the creek and everything that you're surrounded with just right in, you know, the seat of the Bighorn Mountains is just wonderful. But for me, the history of it is wonderful. A Crow chief who was named Sits in the Middle of the Land actually ended the Crow origin story right on the hill, right actually where the new building is. It's right there in Little Goose Valley. And Crows looked for what was called the tobacco root plant. And for many, many years, they migrated, and they finally found it here in the Bighorn Mountains. So that's why we often hear Crows say this is Crow country, because that's what Sits in the Middle of the Land said when he sat down right there on the hill right where we're at.
That's incredible, Danielle. That's absolutely incredible. And I'll admit, you know, I had worked in the area for quite some time before I had a friend, Stephen Dow, who invited me and my wife up to breakfast at the Britain. And I thought, breakfast at the Britain? What is going on? So I went up there. We had a fantastic meal. And I spent all day, not just in the museum, not just looking at the amazing artifacts that they have and the history attached to those, but I was outside.
Mm-hmm.
And those trees are absolutely amazing. I found myself just gravitating back, you know, from one to the other, wondering how long you've been here, big guy, you know, just looking at these things. So it is a heck of a place to just go up and wander around. And one thing that I do want to say, there's a really interesting little, I guess you'd call it side quest, mini game, whatever you want to call it. I had to find all those little horny totes that are hidden around there. And then it became obsessive after a while with the wife and myself and Steven. We absolutely had to find them.
It's fun.
But it takes you all the way around kind of the campus of everything and the gardens that are out there, which were inspiring. I wish I had land to put a garden on after being up there. Now, founded in 1960, if you really, Daniel, look at the role that the Britain has played within our region. How's it changed over the years? I mean, you talked a little bit about, you know, when you were a little girl, it was this, now it's that.
And, you know, actually the original ranch house was built in 1892, and that was built by the Moncrief family. And then Brinton bought it in 1921, I think, early 1920s. He added on to the original ranch house with the atrium and the porches, and made it into what we see today, the horse barn and saddle barns. And I think as time went on, and you know, people that were coming from back east and seeing the area and enjoying, you know, the ranch itself, were bringing more people, and they used to hunt, and they would come out and you know, spend the summers there. And so when Bradford had the place, his sister was also an integral part of the museum and what we have now, is that he told her that it was important to him that she would, you know, live on and keep the area as a historical area and place where people could come and see, you know, what the history was. And so he was an art collector and very, very concerned, I think, about, you know, preserving that. And about those artifacts that I was talking about before, you know, I worked at the Smithsonian, Washington, D.C., and there's over 1 million artifacts there in that collection. Our artifacts, we have about 1,000 Native American artifacts. And what's special to me about that is that those artifacts were given to the people that lived there, because Crows would go back to that area every year and camp there because that was the sacred area for them. And so all the artifacts that I believe we have from Crow people, you know, freely given. And of course there's, you know, I'm sure they say Bradford was a collector too. So I know that there was bought things, but just makes me feel good to know that a lot of that stuff that we have out there was, freely given. And, you know, that's a difference of, you know, if you know anything about museum collection and artifacts, you know, sometimes you don't know where that stuff maybe came from.
Yeah.
And for me, I always feel, you know, good, positive vibes. And we have a great American Indian Advisory Council. We've got Crows and Cheyennes and Dakota. Well, I'm looking at him because he's Oglala. Yeah. Oh. Anyway, so we have a good representation of Native Americans that come and visit with us and talk to us about all that stuff. And so I just feel like it's so educational. And, you know, having a museum in Sheridan like this, I mean, it is world class, and we're really lucky to have it. And that's one reason why we really wanted to come on today and make sure that people in our area know that, you know, it's free. And so money is not an issue for families, you know, to come out and just sit at the grounds and do a picnic or come to the bistro. We've got great food there, and we've got a great museum store and just books. And there's so much that culturally, you know, is important to hold on to in this area. And I think that that's why we are, you know, one of the great places that I always visit now. I mean, I'm every time I have friends or family in town, you know, we go to the Brinton because that's the place where I think represents this area best.
Definitely one of the jewels in the crown. Mm-hmm. For our area, you know, and when it comes to like the Native American items that are out there, that's great to hear. I know the Jim Getchell Museum's kind of the same way. The items that they have were gifted to Jim Getchell from local tribes. So it's great to see those being there with the will that they're there.
Correct.
Now, you said the Brinton offers free general admission. Has it always been this way, or is this a newer development?
This is something that came out of COVID. So when COVID happened, we weren't sure what to do. Financially, it was weird. You know, we closed the museum essentially for a while. And one of the local businesses came in and sponsored to help cover the loss of admission funds that we were receiving. And so we started with free admission at that point, and we said, you know, well, this is actually a really good idea.
Yeah.
Let's just have free admission all the time. And so some businesses in the community have supported us over the years, and it's changed hands a couple of times. And at this point, we have some private individuals and some foundations that are funding our admission costs for the general public. And to me, it's really important to have that free admission all the time. It gives you no excuse not to come.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it opens it up to everybody.
Everyone. And if you go to a large city, you know, some of those museums are $20, $30 or more to get in per person. And that can be tough. That can be tough. You know, when you're looking at what to do with your day, that's a meal. Or if it's a whole family, that's a very large meal. Mm-hmm. And so just having free admission and access to the arts and culture for everyone is really important to us as an institution.
Has it changed the way it feels in there a little bit? Are you seeing, and this may sound strange, but are you seeing more families and kids?
To a degree. And generally speaking, the number of people coming through the doors is increasing year to year. And so I think that people are understanding what we have and that they can just pop out at any point and just even come in for half an hour and have a quick look. You know, it's that simple. It's not, you don't have to invest a lot of time to go through the museum, and you don't have to invest money to get into the museum.
Yeah.
You just come in and enjoy it. And it's really nice.
And again, for me, it's about the kids, you know, whole families going out there, making a whole day of it. And these kids being exposed to beautiful art, beautiful grounds, being exposed to culture.
Yeah.
On a level that a lot of us don't get to see on a daily basis.
Yeah, and it's real too. It's not a screen.
Yeah,
you know, it's not something on your phone or on your tablet. It's something that you can look at from all different directions.
And that has tangible meaning.
Yeah,
and that may sound like a turn of phrase, but to look at a painting on my phone, and I look at a lot of art online, but and there's like a separation. It's just a picture. When I go to a museum and I stand in front of a painting and wonder how the heck did they do this, or I get to see the texture of each brushstroke, or look at a pot and wonder how long did it take them to sit there and throw that and bake it, and you know, when they put it in the kiln, was it painted beforehand or after? I mean, there's so many questions that I have all the time when it comes to this art.
That's that aesthetic value.
Absolutely. But it adds a mystery to it.
Sure.
Almost a magic.
Yeah.
You know? something ethereal to this practice that these individuals can make these items, can carve these items, or paint these images is almost a magic to me. Mm. It's absolutely amazing. So I love the fact that it's got this free admission, free access for so many families. You can make a day of this. You can go up and you can really explore kind of a centralized place of the culture of the area, the cultures of the area. Now, beyond the galleries, experiencing the grounds, where can we go? Because I've talked a lot about the trees. You talked about the carriage house, which I believe has some really beautiful old cars in it. I can remember looking through a window. There's got the old cars in a lot of there, and then saddles and all kinds of stuff. What else could we do on the property?
Well, one thing I wanted to say earlier when you were talking, Floyd, was just speaking about the youth. Right now, we actually have the fifth grade art show, and that is an amazing show. It's our fifth grade classes from all around the district get an opportunity to put art on the wall in the gallery, and that has been amazing for me. I mean, that's actually what took me out to the Brinton about 3 or 4 years ago when my little guy was in fifth grade, and we went out and he was just so proud of himself to see his art in an art museum, you know, and
it's part of a gallery show.
And it's just so cool to see those kids come in with their families. And that is a big thing that we've been doing now for about 10 years. And I love being in there in the building with the energy of all those kids and teachers and families and just how proud they are of themselves. So that was just one thing I wanted to say about the youth. But getting back to your original question, we do have two nature trails out there. One is about a mile long and
the other one's 2.4 miles, I believe.
It's a little longer.
And we open them up during the summertime, obviously, when the trails dry out a bit. We don't want them people getting hurt or slipping or getting lost in the snow. And they're really fun. They're not hard trails. It's not like, you know, going up Red Grade. It's something simple you could do with the little ones.
It's a jaunt, not an adventure.
Exactly. Right? Yeah.
And so. We have other activities. You know, we have a gal that comes out and does yoga on Sundays in the summer up on the pad there above the museum.
Can anybody join that?
Yep. Daniel? Yes. So you can come out on Sunday and do a little yoga, and we have so many things. We have a lot of events. You know, we had a huge event we rebranded this year. It was called Things That Go Bump in the Night. It was our Halloween event, but we rebranded it as the Haunted Ranch. And we had so many families out, and again, free. We had a food truck out there, and we had science kids in the greenhouse doing kind of creepy crawly things. We had a little bit, I'm going blank on what it's called when you scare people in the barn. That was my job.
I can't even remember. House.
Yes. Yeah. It was a haunted, but haunted barn. Yeah. So just wonderful. Lots of events. We try to do as much as we can outdoors because, you know, of course, you know, our area is so beautiful in the summer, but we only get a few months to do that. So we have tons of stuff. Welcome Spring event is out. We try to do outdoors. We have art camp, nature camp. Gosh, we've got a lot of things that go on outside. So we do try to utilize that space. And is it 640 acres? I think the ranch.
Roughly, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So it's a huge area and we're really proud of it. Our groundskeeper and everybody that works there just, you know, we really love it. And we all enjoy, you know, walking on our lunch time and just being in the area is really always great.
So it would be a heck of a place to be able to just take a break.
Yeah.
That I think that's the biggest issue they would have with me. Floyd's either in the gallery or he's outside. Somebody go find Floyd. All right. On that, I got to take a quick commercial break. We're going to have more at the Brinton Museum. When we return, you're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
What if your bank actually shared your values?
That's the difference at First Federal Bank and Trust.
No outside shareholders, just shared values.
Just people banking with people and investing right back into our community.
Supporting local nonprofits.
Strengthening the place where we call home.
With local branches and convenient online and mobile banking.
Banking without shareholders.
You belong at First Federal Bank and Trust. Member FDIC.
Winter's almost done, the grass is getting ideas, and your mower's sitting there bushed from last year's battle with your lawn. You got to get it to Hando Service Center for the back-to-life tune-up. Fuel system cleaned, blades sharpened, oil oiling, and spark plug sparking, so when you turn that key, your best buddy is ready to do lawn battle again. Riding mowers, pushers, the whole lawn army. Get ahead of the battle before it gets ahead of you. Hando Service Center on Sheridan's Heartland Drive.
Do you struggle to hear or hear ringing, buzzing, or hissing that won't go away? That could be tinnitus, and you're not alone. Hi, this is Elizabeth from EBA Hearing, and I have good news. Today's advanced hearing aids and innovative, proven therapy like Lanier use sound and gentle stimulation to reduce tinnitus awareness. Relief starts with a conversation. Call EBA Hearing to schedule a hearing loss or tinnitus evaluation today, because silence shouldn't feel so far away. 674-8920. That's 674-8920.
This announcement is brought to you by Farmers Co-op, your farm and ranch supply store on Coffin Avenue.
AARP kicks off Community Challenge grants for its 10th year. Apply until March 4th. Grants support projects that make communities more livable for people of all ages. Winning projects will be announced in June. Last year, Sheridan and Claremont both received grants. Go to aarp.org/communitychallenge to apply. If you don't apply, you won't get one.
Buy 2 weeks, get 2 weeks free. That's right. Buy 2 weeks of personal classified advertising in the Country Bounty, and we'll give you two more weeks for free. Need extra cash? Want to get rid of those unwanted items? The Country Bounty is the perfect place. It's direct mail to every home in Sheridan and Johnson County and online at SheridanMedia.com. 4 weeks of exposure for the price of two, but hurry, the deadline's Thursday at 1 o'clock. Call 672-7421 or stop by our Sheridan Media studios at KROE Lane.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting. This morning, we're speaking with Britain Museum Communications Director, Jacob Rouleau, and Advancement Associate, Danielle Arno. Now, let's talk about some of those current and upcoming events. Danielle, you touched on the fifth grade student art show. Do you remember how... And it was probably before your time. You said this is over a decade old. Has anyone discussed how it started? Did somebody just wake up one day and say, you know what? I want to get the kids up here. I want to put them on a kind of a professional wall.
Well, I think I had read somewhere that it was Forrest Mars, if that's correct. I don't know if I'm, you know, speaking out of turn, but I believe it was, you know, Forrest Mars was a huge contributor to the Brinton, and really thought he knew that it was important, you know, to preserve what we had out there. And so he was integral part of the Brinton Museum today. So I'm thinking I read somewhere that it was Mars who wanted to do that.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
It really wouldn't surprise me. Now, what does it mean to the Brinton? You know, we can sit here and we can talk about what it really means to the kids, but what does it mean to the Brinton to have the little ones out there being able to put their art on the wall, have their families visit? I mean, what does that feel like when you get to see those doors open and those kids just pour in to see their stuff?
Warm and fuzzy,
yeah,
comes to mind,
yeah,
you know, right away. It's really amazing to encourage youth and to see the wonder in their eyes and the sense of pride they get, mm-hmm, you know, seeing their artwork on the wall. And It's nice to work with living artists sometimes, even if they're small.
Yeah, absolutely.
And hopefully it'll start a lifetime of interest in art and culture, and hopefully get them going in that direction where they care about that kind of stuff.
If folks go out there and check this out, is it just 2D or do we have some 3D displays as well from the kiddos? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the artwork is, you know, is based on what the teachers in the area have in their curriculum, and we do have 2D works, and we pretty much always have 3D works, and it varies from year to year, you know, but it's generally a mix.
Oh, that's fantastic!
Yeah.
All right, now If we look at Zach Pullen's 21st Illustrator Show, who is Zach Pullen and why was he selected for this exhibition?
Zach Pullen is a nationally known and recognized illustrator and children's book illustrator, and he lives down in Casper. He was chosen for this, obviously, because of his connections to the state and to the region, and also basically, I mean, his talent. He's just amazing as an illustrator. He's really, really good. He's very prolific. I don't know how many books he's...
A lot.
Yeah, but there's a lot of books that he's either in or that he's illustrated for. So, and it's a really fun show.
And I love how we can take something like that, you know, oh, I'm a children's illustrator. That's still art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, and as you said, it's prolific.
Mm-hmm.
And if we think about, okay, well, your child might just be sitting there reading a fun little book, but think about the impact that that art is having on your child.
Yeah.
And I can still remember certain books, and not just Dr. Seuss, but certainly Dr. Seuss, but Pokey Little Puppy, things like that. Those stick with you for your entire life. And to take those illustrations and put them up and recognize them as the actual art that they are, I think is absolutely amazing. Now, can you tell us a little bit about the original illustrations? And if I understand this right, you have From the Christmas Ass and A Home for Steamboat, which obviously everybody here in Wyoming should know who Steamboat is.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about those.
Well, the original works that are on display right now are oil paintings. And, you know, getting back to Dr. Seuss, like Dr. Seuss using more of a pen and ink style of painting, these are incredibly rich. These are entire canvases. So you'd have not just the characters that he paints, but also the background and the scenes that the story is taking place in. And so the colors are very vibrant. The finished rendering on these paintings has a lot of luster, and they're glossy and they're just fantastic. The Home for Steamboat book, which I believe is his latest work, is obviously about, the iconic horse, bucking horse symbol for the state of Wyoming. And it is that tale of how that horse and that symbol, you know, became the state logo, essentially, if you will. Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty cool setup, and it's a really wonderful show.
I think that's amazing, you know, kind of teaching kids a little bit of history while making it fun as well.
Mm-hmm.
A Home for Steamboat. All right. Now, real quick, looking ahead, what can visitors expect from Jim Jackson, Legacy in Art and Leather? I just love the name of this. Leather work is some of the finest work if you find a true artist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Jim is a rock star. Jim is a legend. Jim is internationally known for his craft and his art. And we are very proud to be showcasing a retrospective of his painting. And he is known a lot for his leather work and the Sheridan style. He worked at King's for years.
Mm-hmm.
But over the course of time, he painted on the side and did leather work on the side. And over the course of time, he started integrating the two. And that's fascinating. So he has a bunch of paintings that will be on display where there's carved leather and oil paint. Or I'm assuming he uses oil. I actually never asked him. He might use acrylic. I don't know. Anyway, it's going to be a fantastic show. He is someone who has worked and worked and worked and worked hard and produced a ton of art over the years, and we get to see the best of the best of his career.
So fantastic.
Yeah, we're very excited about this show.
Jacob, when's that showing up?
The opening reception is March 12th in the evening, and that show will be up through March, all the way to the first week of August. So you'll have plenty of time to see it. You'll have lots of time to come and see it again. So, and I do recommend that. We're going to have some additional programming based around this exhibition. We are working with Sheridan Travel and Tourism. We're going to have a showing at the YO Theater of the documentary about Jim that they did. And so and we're going to have the Wyoming Baroque out at the museum as part of this exhibition. We're going to have all kinds of things. So it's really exciting. It's going to be huge. And we are very proud to have this going on.
I think this is great. We are celebrating not just a local artist, but somebody who has truly, through hard work, honed his craft and talent. And, you know, you're going to go out there, you're going to see leather work you probably never thought was possible. And I absolutely love that. And the combination of painting and leather together, that's what's going to take me out there. I'd love to see that. Real quick, I've lost my time with you. So, Danielle, if I wanted to know more about the Britain or anything else, what do I need to do?
Well, you could go to our website, thebrittonmuseum.org, and we're on socials, Instagram, Facebook. And I just want to put a plug real quick into our March membership month. We do give 20% off of membership. So that's new memberships renewing. So we love to have you. You know, membership is important to us. It is how we do things like, you know, free admission. So becoming a member is really easy. You can go online and we have several different levels of membership. So and that's what I do out there. So give me a call. Diarno at the Brinton Museum. .org is my email and or call us anytime.
All right. Thank you for getting that in there. I appreciate you both coming in this morning and having this discussion.
Absolutely.
It's always great having the Britain in.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
All right. When we come back, we're going to speak with the Sheridan County Library System. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
Some banks answer to shareholders.
First Federal Bank and Trust answers to the community.
Because as a mutual bank, everyone benefits. Profits stay local.
Supporting nonprofits and community programs with decades of local roots and modern online and mobile banking that fits your life.
More than a bank.
A mutual commitment.
First Federal Bank and Trust. Member FDIC.
Talking with Bill from Tales of the City. One of the big reasons to choose Tales of the City is food for your pets.
The food that we carry are mainly five-star foods. They're the best of the best, really. And that's what's real good about us is that we know the nutrition value of it. We have animals ourselves that have lived for 19, 20, 21 years. German Shepherds that have been 16, 17 years old because they've been on a specific diet.
Get the best of the best at Tales of the City, 218 West Burkett.
Mossholder's Design Center is here to help you create a space that you'll love. If you're relocating, remodeling, or just refreshing your home, Mossholder's talented design team can help you through the process. With free in-home consultations, Mossholder's will be able to find the furniture and finishing touches that work best with your space, your lifestyle, and your budget. So if you want to change the look of just one room or furnish an entire home, Mossholder's designers can get it done. Mossholder's, furniture is our passion.
Hi, this is Kayla Carr with Sheridan Honda. Life moves fast, so should your auto service. Whether you drive a Honda, Jeep, Ford, or any other make, our expert technicians have you covered. We service all makes and models with same-day appointments always available. We offer loaner cars and shuttle service anywhere in Sheridan. Exceptional customer service, all makes and models, same-day appointments. It's not just a dealership. It's Sheridan Honda.
Let this be the day that I learn the secret. A family that lives forever. A spring that stops the clock. Imagine the price the world would pay for a single drop.
Winnie Foster. Imagine it. No growing up, no goodbyes. Just every tomorrow you could ever dream of.
But Jesse...
Find out what happens when time stands still. Tongue River High School presents Tuck Everlasting.
Performing March 12th, 13th, and 14th at 6 p.m. in the Tongue River High School Auditorium.
Grab your tickets at the Tongue River High School office or through the TRHS website.
Don't fear death, fear an unlived life.
Tuck Everlasting is presented by arrangement with Concord Theatricals. Book by Claudia Shear and Tim Federle. Music by Chris Miller. Lyrics by Nathan Tyson. Based on the novel Tuck Everlasting by Natalie Babbitt.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse, proudly brought to you by our friends out there at First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting, and for our second part this morning, we're speaking with Sheridan County Library System Director, Amy Long. Good morning. Welcome back to the show, my friend.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Oh, it's raining outside.
I know.
In February.
Thank goodness, though.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. I'm okay with rain. Just as long as we get the moisture, I'm all right with that.
Yeah.
My drives this season have been amazing.
I know. You know,
I'm not going to lie.
I know.
But this was going to be the season, and I know I've talked about this a lot, folks, but this was going to be the season that my wife and I took up cross-country skiing.
Oh.
Mm. And of course, the snow god said, not going to happen this year, buddy.
Yeah, weather has to cooperate for that kind of thing.
I'm trying to make snow fun, you know, because as you get older, snow,
it's just cold.
It's just cold and it's just work.
So true.
And so my wife said, you know, we got to make it fun again, you know, snowballs and sledding and skiing and really take advantage of it. And the one year I decide, okay, I'm all in, it doesn't snow.
Yeah.
Saying that, it's going to be miserable next year. You watch. You watch. It's going to be nothing but snow.
Except you're going to have a blast because you're going to have fun in the snow for cross-country skiing.
I just got to stay in the mindset. Yeah. I got to stay in the mindset. Yeah. All right, my friend, can you give us an overview on the system-wide renovation project and how it's going?
Absolutely. So the library is currently getting renovated. All branches are getting carpet, paint, lighting or ceiling tiles, depending on the location, and furniture, although the furniture is delayed, so probably won't get furniture out to the branches until a little later, because the furniture procurement bid went out with the Fulmer construction bid, which is currently out now.
Okay.
So we're getting closer to getting a schedule for the Fulmer remodel, and trying to get some plans printed up that we can post in the library to showcase what it's going to look like, kind of working through all of that right now. This was all made possible by grant, so we're very excited about that opportunity. We wouldn't be able to do this otherwise, so that has been a huge, huge opportunity for the library to finish up these, getting new carpet, lighting, furniture, you know, rearranging the shelves. All of that is such a Herculean task.
Oh, my goodness. What did it feel like opening? I imagine it was an email.
Mm-hmm.
What did it feel like opening that up and seeing that you were approved for this grant?
It was amazing. It's the first grant application I've ever written, because I did not do that in my former job as a manager at Douglas County Libraries. And so to be a new director, to have this opportunity to get this kind of funds to complete this kind of project, and then to have it go through, I was over the moon. It was so exciting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And say, you know, Cameron Duff made such an impact when it came to like the big things.
Yeah.
Right. Those big things. But then COVID hit.
Yeah.
You know, supply chain fell off the end of the earth.
Yep.
And so he had to postpone all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And so you come in, you look at it, and you're like, okay, I got to get this finished somehow.
Mm-hmm.
You apply for this grant, you got it, boom.
Yeah, and thankfully, I mean, I relied a lot on all the work Cameron had done with the previous campaign, because this was all part of what he was going to try to do and then just couldn't get all the funds together to do. And so if he hadn't done the amazing job he did, we wouldn't be here today, because I wouldn't have had any material to give him. So
just like the big chunks out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and you get to come in and make it all look great.
Yes, but I will never take credit from Cameron. He did fantastic getting us here.
So what's been done out of our ancillary branches so far?
Oh, yeah. Well, Claremont is pretty much completed, being that it's one room. It's one of the first done. It has new carpet, paint. Our shelves will be delayed with the furniture, and so we just have basic things in there now until we get all the new furniture. But yeah, the lighting was already done. Mike Buss had already done that work last summer, and so the lighting in the ceiling was already done, and so the rest of it was pretty cosmetic. But it's looking beautiful. It's amazing.
That's so great. Yeah. It's just a refresh can really bring a place back to life, can it?
Absolutely.
I mean, how are the librarians out there pretty pleased?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's so pretty.
That's great to hear. Folks, if you haven't visited, you know what? You could take a Saturday. Just drive around. You guys are open on Saturday.
We are. And Tongue River, half of their branch is still being renovated. The other half, I think, has turned over now or possibly in the next few weeks. And then Story just started. So Story you won't see finished until like April. I think they're planning the end of March to wrap up. So wait a little on Tongue River and Story if you want to wait and see the full end product. And if you're waiting for furniture, you might go out in the summer when the roads are a little better.
Head out sometime in the summer and just take a big tour of your local libraries and see all the work that's being done out there. I'm going to switch subjects on you because some things have been going on down in Cheyenne, close to the flagpole. There's been a bit of back and forth about this. Some people might not even know what the heck's going on. Yeah. So tell me about House Bill 10. What does this bill propose?
Yeah, House Bill 10 is a current bill called the Sexually Explicit Materials in Libraries bill. And it is a bill that will define what sexually explicit is, separate from any current obscenity definitions that are in the laws anywhere else, and then define children's sections as anything for basically under 17. So teens and kids, all of that is treated the same way. Then it says that any sexually explicit materials that meet that definition cannot be in those children's sections. If they are in those children's sections, meaning teen or youth, then and a community member finds it, they should go through the reconsideration process, which is great. Libraries already have that process with their community where we can look at a book and say, is this in the right place? Was there something in this we weren't aware of? If they're unhappy with that decision, then they can sue the library. And if that happens, then the library has to defend themselves against this lawsuit. And it can be quite costly. And we're not quite sure exactly how the costs would lay out. In school libraries, they'd have to remove it all together because they don't have an adult section to move things to. And so this is sort of the bill that's under consideration right now. WLA, the Wyoming Library Association, has a stance on it. I did put a letter to the editor in the Sheridan Press about it as well, just clarifying my stance as a director. Because it's really a challenge for libraries right now.
Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, the Wyoming Library Association president, Kristen Brady,
Christine,
says that they remain steadfastly opposed to this legislation for several reasons, saying this bill takes the rights out of the hands of parents and gives those rights to the government. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think I understand the different value systems that exist in the world. I support that. Being
the more the better.
Yeah, being very, very much a librarian, born and bred. You know, I hate to use the word neutral, but that is our stance. Is like we're nonpartisan. We're there to provide access to information, not to make other than the basic professional judgments about what should be in a library, like No Hustler magazine, for example.
Right, right.
That kind of thing. Like we are discerning about what materials are in the library and making sure they have literary value and making sure that they're, accurate materials, like if it's a factual material, all of those things. But we're not there to make value-based judgments on the materials that are in the library or about anyone who checks out those materials that are in the library. And my feeling is really, like I said in my letter, any law that seeks to limit, control, dictate what materials should be in your public library really contradicts the fundamental mission of libraries, because we're a community resource and we're supposed to be providing access to the whole community and not limiting that based on our judgments or anyone else's judgments. It's supposed to be open access. And obviously there are safeguards in place and that kind of thing. But this idea that libraries are there to hurt children when that is such a core part of our mission, is to build literacy and bring families in and give them resources and help them supplement their home libraries and help grow readers and create passionate, curious individuals in our community. It's tough. You know, you just hate to see it. And any law like this is really just an open door. It's like a foot in the door for more legislation, more censorship, more things that come down, you know, that whole slippery slope thing, you know?
Well, and you used a word there that I absolutely despise, and that is censorship.
They claim it's not. And that's always the big thing, is what is censorship? And if you move it to another collection, is it censorship? It's like, well, maybe, but if I move a book that you think is too spicy, for lack of a better word, for the teens into the adult section, now you have the teens in the adult section with even spicier books.
Mm-hmm.
So is that, and do we stop slowly buying those books, or do people want more books taken out because they disagree with them? And it just becomes, that's how you get to censorship.
The slippery slope, as you said. Now, a lot of organizations, including library associations, have expressed concerns about the effects of this bill on classic literature.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is a lot of things in classic literature that you can define as sexual material, depending on your definition of those two words. Think about this, folks. Someone coming in and removing The Scarlet Letter and removing To Kill a Mockingbird. Both books, by the way, have been banned by other organizations in the United States. And then depending on how someone else might feel about those two words and how they define it, they come and remove even more. So I want people to keep that in mind. If House Bill is passed into law, what steps would county libraries like yours need to take to comply with these definitions?
That is one of the things we're starting to really try to dig into. The idea that we could read through every material that's in sort of our young adult collections or teen collections in order to know if it fits the definition or not is unrealistic. Plus, how is that definition going to be applied? It's a very odd anatomical definition, like very clinical, but you never know if they're going to apply it if somebody just refers to those acts, or if it's not, if it's tangential to the story, like how specific is it going to be applied? So yeah, the idea that we could preemptively take care of the problem is not realistic. We do have reconsideration policies in place across libraries. Pretty much every library that I've ever heard of has one.
And so, they've been there forever.
Yeah, and they work really well. And so that is the easy part. The other part is, what exactly will any litigation look like, and how do we prepare for that? And do we have to consult lawyers? And you know, it's just, there's just complexities that we're not even sure exactly how we will prepare until it's a problem. And then we hope we're not caught too flat-footed, you know.
Mm-hmm. And then by then, someone's suing you.
Yeah.
I imagine monetary gain.
Yeah. Well, it would be a big hit to the library budget. We don't have a budget for that kind of thing. And then that would mean county funds or something. I mean, I don't even know how that's paid for. So then it becomes, well, what happens to that? Do we not do programs because we have to have a legal budget? Like, so it's just complicated in ways we're a little nervous about.
Which I can completely understand. Now, let's see. How prepared, well, there you go. We just answered that question. As you sit back and you look at this, where is House Bill 10 right now?
It is with the Senate. It passed the House. And so now they have flopped all their bills. Everything that passed in one chamber has now passed to the other chamber in order for them to consider where they stand on it. So it's now with the Senate. So if you have an opinion on this, reach out to your senator and let them know for your local representative, because it should be going to committee this week. And if it passes through committee, it likely will pass into law.
Nobody that I know of in any library system that I've ever had a conversation with wants to expose children to indecent material?
No.
Nobody.
No.
It makes no sense to sit there and try to make that as an argument. And that's not the argument that we're making now. That's something that we want. But these definitions, a good lawyer could put just about anything on that if it's argued correctly.
That's our fear, yeah.
So, you know, in my opinion, my humble opinion, I would say that House Bill 10 is probably going to be pretty damaging to our libraries. And once again, I'm not a big fan of censorship when it comes to materials such as this. Indecent, absurd materials, absolutely. I totally agree with them on that. They've got no place in our American libraries whatsoever.
Yep.
No place in the hands of children. But when it comes to certain books, To Kill a Mockingbird, The Scarlet Letter, classic literature, those need to be read. Those need to be looked at, and they need to be learned from. I want to thank you so much for coming in this morning, my friend, speaking with me about this very important issue.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right, folks, you've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
Ever wonder where your bank's priorities really are?
At First Federal Bank and Trust, they're right here at home.
No shareholders, just shared values.
Local decision-making, community support, and a long-standing commitment to the people we serve.
Plus the convenience of online and mobile banking.
Banking that matches your values.
First Federal Bank and Trust. More than a bank, a mutual bank. Member FDIC.
Doug, I watched a video and tried fixing my car.
How'd that go?
I have extra bolts.
Oh boy. That's why you trust the service department at Waring Chevrolet, Bob.
Factory trained technicians, oil changes, brake repairs, alignments, a collision shop, and detailing. With our tire price match guarantee, you'll get the lowest price on brand name tires as well. And oh, did I mention if you bring in a competitor's advertised service offer, we'll meet that as well.
Perfect. I'll save YouTube for my cookie.
Good idea, Bob.
Schedule online at WaringSheridan.com.
Unlikely friends, the excitable hare, and the wise tortoise meet for the greatest race on earth in the joyful stage adaptation of Aesop's beloved fable as it bursts into life across the YO Theater stage Sunday, March 8th at 4 p.m. The hare and tortoise explores friendships, opposites, and growing up, while reminding us that slow and steady can sometimes win the day. Get your tickets for the hare and tortoise, available now at the YO box office or online at yotheater.com.
Hi, this is Taylor, front of house manager at Frackleton's. From the moment you walk in, we want your meal to feel easy, welcoming, and unrushed. A great night out isn't just about what's on the plate. It's how you're greeted, how you're taken care of, and how everything flows. We pay attention to the details so you don't have to. Good food, good service, good timing, start to finish. Frackleton's, Main Street, downtown Sheridan. Oh, and book your table early on Frackleton's.com.
Do you ever hear ringing, buzzing, or humming when the room is quiet? You might be dealing with tinnitus, and if so, you're definitely not alone. Hi, this is Dr. Addison Dempsey from Ebia Hearing in Sheridan. We talk with people every day who feel frustrated, exhausted, and unsure where to turn because of tinnitus. The good news is there are treatment options. Advanced hearing aids like Starkey Omega AI can help reduce the perception of tinnitus by properly stimulating your auditory nerve and with masking technology. We also offer Lanier, an innovative FDA-approved therapy that combines sound with gentle stimulation to help retrain how the brain responds to tinnitus. There's no one-size-fits-all solution, which is why we start by listening to you. If you're struggling to hear well or tinnitus is affecting your sleep, focus, or quality of life, schedule a consultation with Ebia Hearing today. You deserve quiet, clear moments again. Ebia Hearing on Coffeen Avenue in Sheridan. Call 674-8920. That's 674-8920.